It's always good to be here. It's always good to be back home. This is the church I grew up in. Of course, most of you here will know that. I'm told there might be some new people here, so I guess I should just mention that my family started going to this church when I was, about 9 years old in 1977 or something like that. And when I was in third grade, my Sunday school teacher is sitting right here, John Monroe. Of course, Gary was doing the Awana, which is very important for me. I still know some of the verses I memorized in those days. Comes in handy when you're in jail and they take your Bible away from you, because you have to have it here. And many, many others. So it's great to be here. Lots of things I want to share, but I see the time's running out. Now, I was told I get 20 to 40 minutes, so I'm going to try and keep it in that range. Greetings from my wife. I already talked to her this morning. I'm been up early. It's not because I'm spiritual. It's a thing called jet lag. It's great. I get time alone. And it's enjoying getting the things ready I want to share this morning. Lots of things to share, but I just want to, time is short, so let me jump right in. The verse I want to share with you is 2 Corinthians chapter 1. If you want, you can look there in your Bible. 2 Corinthians chapter 1, we're going to look at four verses real briefly, starting with verse 8. So it's 2 Corinthians chapter 1, starting with verse 8. So it says, "For we do not want you to be unaware, brothers, of the affliction we experienced in Asia." By the way, Asia is not China. Asia is the western part of modern-day Turkey. And I live in Istanbul, which is my family, was just north of there in a province called Bithynia. You can read about it in the book of Acts. Probably some of you here read that book, I'm aware of. But I did not have troubles in Asia so much recently. My problems with the police here was in Galatia. And you have a book in your New Testament written to the Galatians. And the capital of Turkey is in the province of Galatia. And that is where I got the joy of getting free room and board from the government again. "For we were so utterly burdened beyond our strength that we despaired of life itself." Now, I don't despair of life itself. And I was reading this, I'm like, well, I don't feel so utterly burdened beyond our strength. But sometimes when I think of the work and the things I want to do for this Jesus who died for us, it does get overwhelming. And people think I'm exaggerating, but it's not last I counted. I have 600 things on my to-do list. And there's not enough people in our office to get all the work done. And I despair sometimes, how am I ever going to get all this done? And you may laugh, but one of the things I always like when I get in jail, and they seem to be adding up now, is that I am set free from this burden of having to answer emails and messages and all that stuff, because I just lay in there. They've taken all my devices away from me, and I'm in this very well-guarded place where no danger is going to come to me. And this time I was in a really safe place. It was the main police station of Ankara, with tanks and soldiers with machine guns all around, and I was deep in the basement, several layers of walls and things and security, doors to get there. So I felt very safe. And I felt very free from distraction. And I had great times with God. If you need to get away from distractions, I mean, you can get yourself thrown into jail for Jesus' sake. That will do the trick. But you can maybe just take a fast from your things that distract you, because I am easily distracted. That's one of my problems. But keep reading. Verse 9, "Indeed, we felt that we had received the sentence of death, but that was to make us rely not on ourselves, but on God who raises the dead." And that is a lesson that we all need to learn. And I'm very glad to say that I think I've sort of learned that. And it is an important thing. It's interesting. He says next, "He delivered us from such a deadly peril." What's the deadly peril? I would think that relying on yourself is a very deadly peril. And I hope you are not making that mistake. And I think from a lot of the people I know in this church, they also have learned that that's very dangerous to rely on yourself. And they have learned to much rather to do the smart thing and put their trust in a God who can raise the dead. And people say to me, David, aren't you intimidated? I mean, they arrest you. You got all these big things happening. Who knows what could happen to you? And to me, this is not rocket science. I mean, what is a president or a government or a nuclear bomb or a jail compared to the God of the universe who can raise the dead? This is not difficult. You just see who he is and his great power to save, and it just becomes so obvious who we need to trust. And what does he say there? He delivered us from such a deadly peril, and he will deliver us. he has. All I can say, I mean, I know it because this is God's word, but I also happen to know it because I've experienced it many times. And he is able to save, and he's able to help you. I don't know what your challenges are this morning, but he is more than able to deliver you, and he can. He has done it, and he will do it. And what does it say? On him we have set our hope that he will deliver us again. And I'm hoping for once more. You know, your prayers really are doing great things. I don't know how else to say it. Every time I come here, I feel like I'm coming on the wave of amazing answered prayer. And here I am again. I've been set free. They didn't keep me in there. Actually, Gary was talking to me. He's like, you're probably wishing they would have kept you in there longer. And it's true. Because I wanted to witness to those guys. They were very businesslike this time. Most of the time, I get a chance to chit-chat with them, which gives lots of opportunity to tell them about Jesus. But this time, very businesslike. I mean, the Andrew Brunson affair, and I'm assuming most of you know about Andrew Brunson. That had happened, right? In fact, right when he was praying in the White House for President Trump was right about the time they were arresting me. Because they were probably, because it was on news all over the world, not just here. And they were watching it, and they were probably pretty angry about what had happened. And so I got the joy of getting arrested. And they were super, very businesslike. There was multiple policemen there asking all sorts of questions that had been sent to them by their superiors. And so they were asking them and writing down all my answers. It took a lot of time. But I tried my best to get in a good word for Jesus, because all my years of interacting with the police in Turkey has made me actually love them. I love them. They're humans too. They're just doing their job. And like Pastor Dan said, it's not enough just to, you know, it's great to lay down your life for your friends, but Jesus laid his life down for his enemies. And these people would in some ways think of me as an enemy, but I sure don't think that way of them. And I love them. And he can deliver us. But look at this. The verse I want to focus on is verse 11. You also must help us by prayer, so that many will give thanks on our behalf for the blessing granted us through the prayers of many. You know, this is great. Again, Pastor Dan was talking about the blessings, and I've got blessings granted that I want to share with you guys this morning. And I look here, there's many people here. Blessings have been granted, so I guess according to this verse, it's Thanksgiving time. It's time for us to give thanks, isn't it? Because he's done great things, and I'm going to try and squeeze it into the time they've given me. You can pray for me for that, and I'll be able to do that. I'm out. That's great. I'm going to show you just a few slides. I put these on Facebook a while ago, but many people may not have looked at them. Just to give you an idea, if we look at the next slide, I'll show you what's happening. These three guys, I wish you could meet them, and maybe you'll meet them someday. The guy on the left, Byram, works with us in our office. He's one of the 80 or so people around the country who are following up contacts who request New Testaments or who show interest in the gospel online. He, some I've already talked about in the past, when he came a believer about 4 or 5 years ago, his wife, who's a very devout Muslim, filed for divorce. She said he's been a secret Christian all these years and hid it from me when he's not. He was a very devout Muslim trying to convert people to Islam. He saw a dream. He read the Bible. He got saved. His wife divorced him. He hasn't seen his daughter almost at all for the last 2 years. His wife, despite court orders, is not allowing him to see her. And yet he is just on fire for God. You see that smile on his face? That's real. He's happy. and God works all things together for good. And one of the good things is that because he doesn't have access to his daughter and wife, he's just free to go wherever, and he does. He's all over Turkey all the time, meeting people in the areas where there's no churches to do the follow-up or where it's really weak. He's going and meeting these people. The guy in the middle is a guy who another one of our contacts in the East, who is a very devout atheist, leading all sorts of Muslims into atheism, converting them to atheism. And he was in a university. He also saw dreams. It's too long a story. I don't have enough time. He came to faith. He's lost his inheritance from his family. As a result, they say, you become a nutcase. We wish you would have stayed an atheist. And they themselves are Muslims. And he is doing all he can to try and make up for all the people he's converted to atheism. He's like, I'm going to try and do 10 times as much for Jesus. And he is. And he is just a wonderful guy. Goes around with Bayram and others around the country. The guy sitting next to him there is a guy who's been a believer for 3 years. His family are very devout religious people there. They don't like what he's done. Recently, his dad beat him up with a big iron rod, locked him up in his room for a week. I don't know how he went to the bathroom. Maybe he had a thing in there. And he had black and blue all over the place. But he hasn't given up. He still loves Jesus, and he's meeting with these guys. And the next slide shows yet another guy that guy in the middle is in biblical Iconium. Read about it in Acts 14. It's now called Konya. Extremely religious city, one of the most conservative Islamic cities in the country. And he has found Jesus online, and now he's meeting with others. The next slide shows some other guys who, they also are in Konya, and there's no church for them to go to. They're like, well, let's just start a church ourselves. So they are making plans to start a church among themselves in Iconium. And I don't know the latest. Bayram wants to visit them more often. The next slide is, this is down near the Syrian border, people who've shown interest in the gospel. I don't know how many of them are believers. The next slide is a guy who just came to faith. This report that I'm sending you just was given to me 11 days ago. And this guy apparently come to faith the week before that. The next slide is yet another guy who's planning to come to faith, hasn't done it yet. The next slide is a whole bunch of people who just got baptized this fall. And we work closely with several churches. And one of the churches in Istanbul's got a vision to follow up people all around the country. There's 19 people here apparently who got baptized. 17 of them are contacts from the BCC, from our ministry, finding them online. The next slide, which Byron said the very next day, these guys got baptized the very next week at that church. Now, don't get this idea that we're baptizing 19 people every week. We'd love to see that, but there is lots of great things happening in Turkey, and this is just a few of the pictures. So I want to share a few stories that I don't always get to squeeze them all into my email updates, and I assume some of you read them, so I'm going to tell some of the blessings God has granted as a result of your prayers and the prayers of many others that I've not been able to tell you in my email updates. So some of you will know this summer we went on an outreach to Asia, the province of Asia. We went to Edremit, which in the Bible is called, how do they pronounce it, Adramitus or something, Adramitium. It's in Acts 27. There's a boat that Paul went to Rome in that was from that city. And we went there. There's a little church getting started, and we worked with them. Before we went there, we went to a place called Mudanya, and we had a team of 15 people from all the different nations, and we had come with all this kit we were going to use to stir things up for Jesus in these places. We had these portable tables. We were going to offer free tea to people. We were going to have this sign to say, come and sit down and talk about all those things that you thought were true but actually aren't. So it's not religious, but it sort of leaves something out there. We had other big banners, you know, those big things that flop in the air. We had those with us. We had tons of literature, and we showed up at this hotel when we arrived there, and one of the rooms basically became the armory. I mean, we had all our literature and kit, and the people at the hotel were like, they happened to just see us, walked into the room and it was all there, like, ooh, what are you guys doing here? It was a mom and pop little hotel, and during our time there, we also had got to talk with them, and it's basically the whole family ran the place, and they were surprisingly quite open. And the interesting thing is, I can't even remember, one of the ladies who worked there One of the gals in our group ended up talking with her a lot in the evenings, and she was very interested. She shared her contact details. And that's another thing. You know, I talk about the burden I have. I've got all the people I meet when I go out and do street evangelism. I try to get them to give me their phone numbers or their, you know, Facebook something. And the ones who are really good, I didn't even put all of the good contacts, all the contacts, but the ones who I think are good, I put on a little folder on my phone here. And these are just some of the people from the last few months that I'm trying to stay in touch with. So that's a burden. You know, Paul talked about burden. I feel guilty just looking at this list, because these are all people who said they want to meet, they want to know more about Jesus, and a lot of them I haven't been able to follow up yet. And I just this morning, as I was writing this, I'm like, oh boy, that lady at that hotel has stayed in touch with that girl from the team. She wants to go to a church, but she wants to hear from me. I don't know why. She knew that I was there. Maybe I talked with her. And so this other gal is writing me message after message. You need to contact this lady there to meet up with her. And I haven't done it yet. Ah. But there's just more interest. I can't keep up. So pray for me that I won't forget to write to this lady there who wants to go to church. Anyways, we go out in the streets and we set up our table and right on this big open promenade, tons of people right along the seafront, and immediately the merchant police show up. What are you doing here? So they start asking, well, we're just having tea with people. And of course, we're not doing anything wrong. But eventually, they sort of figured out, aha, these are missionaries. Well, I didn't know it when I got there, because we had told that town had a bunch of open-minded liberal people. But they certainly weren't in that part of the city. So they got very angry. The policeman was very happy that he had figured us out. And so they were just watching us like a hawk for what we were doing. And so everyone obviously was very afraid to come near us because these policemen were watching. So finally we said, well, let's not do this. Let's go down the way. So we did what evangelists do. They use these things. Blessed are the feet of those who bring good news. So we moved on. We didn't shake the dust off there. But we just moved on down the road. And you know, the more you move, all of a sudden we found these guys who are doing tattoos. Well, that's a good clue if you ever do ministry in Turkey that those people are probably not religious. They're probably more open-minded. Now, you may not like those sort of people here, but they're exactly the sort of people we want to find. Sure enough, we went and set up our booth in front of them, and this is just 300 meters down the thing. Totally different attitude. Bunch of young people, very happy. They heard what we were doing. One guy said, yeah, talk to this girl here. She wants to become a Christian. Okay. So, witness to her. These guys come by. I mean, I can't tell you the longing and the sense of hopelessness that we saw in the youth there. This group of guys walked by. They saw what we're doing there. They sort of stopped. I went and started talking to them. And, you know, just straight out, we're talking about Jesus. Their eyes lit up. Woo! So I started asking a little bit about them. And you know, they're typical. You know, they're good Turks, so they're going to be Muslim. But I just sensed they weren't. I just knew it. So I just straight out, you know, 5 minutes in the conversation, I say, hey, let's be honest. You guys aren't Muslims. And, you know, it's great to see these young guys. They sort of looked at each other and giggled. They didn't disagree at all. I'm like, yeah, we find it. We want out. We want out of this, but we don't know where to turn. They were up till 1:30 in the morning talking with us. And, you know, I don't know, some of you guys are real spiritual type. You go to bed early, you wake up early. Well, Paul says you become all things to all men. And I told our team on outreach that you can sleep in as long as you want, but you're going to do ministry until the people go to bed. So our ministry time, all that whole outreach started started in the afternoon, but the real action was between 8 o'clock at night and 1 in the morning. So we didn't go to bed early because that's where the people are. And a lot of good things happened there. We went to Edremit, and we worked there. We stayed in a hotel, which also is a great story. This guy, apparently, the way we heard about him is the believers in that area who suggested we stayed there. I got there. I met the hotel owner's story. Now, we run a website called kutsalkitap.org, holybook.org. And last year, our ads showed up on screens in Turkey about 84 million times. And that, again, is thanks to the generosity of God's people all around the world that give us the money so we actually can pay for that. And Google has been nice to us the last couple of years. They give us $10,000 worth of free advertising every month. with their word-based ads. So we're doing everything we can to get the gospel on the screens of people in Turkey. And I hope you're going to do the same here. I've already talked with some of your people in the leadership here about doing that. But I sat down, I got to meet the owner, and you know what he said? He's like, well, you know, I asked him, so, well, how did you grow in your interest in Jesus? And he's like, well, you know, you always see those ads, you know, kutsalkitap.org, have you ever read the New Testament? He said, finally, I just started like, well, I guess I should see what that is. So he clicked on it, takes him to our website. You know, that's the other great thing. You need to keep sowing. You know, he must have seen our ads many, many, many times before he finally got up the courage to click on it. And we need to keep sowing the gospel again and again. Anyways, he clicks on it. He requests the New Testament. He then sends in his address and contact details to us. We pass it on to the church planters in that area, and they have got to know him, and now he's in relationship with them. He hasn't come to faith yet, but his family runs that hotel. We didn't have any problems with him. I take that back. We set up our armory, you know, with all the tracts and literature and book table and all that stuff in one of the rooms right near the reception. And a day or two after we were there, we got in the local news for what we'd been doing. And he showed it to me on his phone. And he's sort of like, are the police going to be coming here and causing problems? I'm like, I hope not. He didn't want to have problems because of what we're doing there. But there was a lot of things that happened. We went out in the streets, did street preaching. I wasn't supposed to, in a sense, but the state of emergency had been turned off, had been, you know, canceled just a couple days before, so I felt I could. I did. A lot of people liked it. A few people didn't. The police showed up again, those people I love. And one of them was very angry. And make a long story short, because I don't have enough time, he leaves. And of course, all the people in the square there are watching this happen, and all these police show up. And so as soon as they leave, a guy walks up to me and says, why don't you come over here? I'd like to give you a cup of tea. So he was running a coffee shop around the corner of the square, and he sat us down, and he said, I think it's great what you're doing. You know, you have a right to say what you want to say in this country. He was a lawyer who, a trained lawyer who couldn't make it, so he's now running a cafe because there's no other way to make money. But he was very friendly, very open-minded. And that's the other thing you see. You know, the Bible says we're the aroma of Christ. Some of the police didn't care, but there was one who really, we were the stench of death to him. And he was not happy at all. But this guy, he was interested. And he wanted to talk. And we ended up having many conversations with him. He didn't come to faith, but he definitely wants to stay in touch. Another one, oh boy, I'm getting a guilty conscience just talking about this. Another guy I should contact, which I haven't. That's why, you know, Paul says one sows and another waters, but it's God who caused the growth. It's hard to do all the things at one time. The harvest is plentiful, the laborers is few. I tend to focus on the sowing side, but I need more people to help with the watering. Anyways, a couple days later, I'll never forget, I was going to go and talk with that coffee shop owner again. So I was just walking over there, and that angry policeman is sitting there right in his shop. So I'm like, oh, so it's too late now. I'm already walking up. So I'm like, hi, how you doing? So I sat down with him, with the coffee shop owner, the three of us sitting around the table. And, of course, he was, you know, he says, I know what you can do. What you're doing here is legal in this country. I wish it wasn't, but I know it is. He says, so when I retire from being a policeman, I'm going to set up a booth right next to you and debate you on every topic, prove that you're wrong. Like, welcome, please come. But the other guy, of course, the shop owner is afraid he's not going to disagree with the policeman sitting there. But after the policeman left, same thing. He says, I don't agree with him. Just, you know, he couldn't say it straight when I was there. But many other people like that showed a lot of interest. The harvest is plentiful. The laborers are few. Just a couple other stories. I don't have enough time, but I want to tell you a little bit about my wife, whom I love a lot. She sent message greetings this morning. She perseveres in reaching out people. She reads the Bible with pretty much any woman who comes in the house and stays long enough to have a cup of tea. And one of them, and I maybe even told you about her, there's a guy in the church we used to be involved in. His name was Ihan. Wife was not a believer. She came from a very devout Muslim family, and she was apparently going to get some inheritance from them. And so even though, in one sense, she was sort of interested in Jesus and her husband was a believer, she was afraid that she's going to lose her inheritance and everything that her family if she was to become a Christian. So she didn't for years. And many times, I must confess, I said to Ulrika, just forget it. Just stop wasting your time with this person. But my wife's stubborn, not just on this topic. I'm stubborn too. She kept meeting with her. She kept meeting with her, and she was reading the Bible with her for the last year and a half. And at first, she didn't like it. And she's like, why are you forcing me to have to read this book every time we meet? But she liked being with Ulrika because Ulrika would really empathize with her, and she felt understood. And so she wanted that closeness and care, but it came with this pill of the Bible that she had to listen to. She didn't like listening to, but as time went on, she started to understand it. And we've known her for 10 years. So Ulrika's been meeting with her on and off for 10 years. And she, just this last year, finally got it. And God opened her eyes. And she came to faith. She got, and Ulrika says she's changed. She's changed. And she's taking classes now to get baptized. And we're not even in that church anymore, but that's great. You know, let that church run with it. There's another one, and I'm really running out of time, but I've told you guys in the past that our kids had these little evangelistic parties with their friends, you know, when they were young, let's say 8 years ago or so. And one of these parties, we invited this gal who's a friend of our girls from our daughter Esther. One of her classmates came, and she was not a believer. Of course, all these people who came were not believers. And when her dad got wind of it, he got very angry. Like, I don't want my daughter being brainwashed by these missionaries. So that was the end of that. She never came to one of those again, and we didn't talk about that, but with them anymore. But interestingly, God got a hold of their lives. And I may have told this before, but he, to make a long story short, they eventually came to faith, that whole family. Even the angry dad. And just a week or so ago, I saw them, and I was very glad to hear, and Ulrika confirmed it this morning, they are now being groomed to be leaders in that church. He's been trained in how to give sermons. And I just asked him last week, I said, wow, you're giving sermons now. Well, what are you talking about? He's like, yeah, I'm giving my first sermon this next week. I'm like, what are you going to talk about? He's like, why we need to preach the gospel to the lost. Yes! Oh, that made me happy. Oh, that made me happy. Because I've dealt with so many people in the churches who love to do the nice, safe thing of sit in the church building. And, you know, they'll gladly tell the gospel to someone who comes in the building. But they won't ever go out to the lost and reach them. And so I'm beating this drum all the time. We need to go to them. And this guy, he's got it. Alper is his name. And there's many other things. And, you know, when you hear these stories, it's right. It says, you also must help us by prayer so that many will give thanks on our behalf. That's why God even has these things happen. He wants us to give thanks. It's right, it's good, it's appropriate, because this is the sort of God who loves us and has saved us. I have some things, suggestions for you as a church, and I don't have time to go into all the details, but I'll tell you the headings. This is actually totally separate now from what I talked about before. My suggestions for Emmanuel Bible Church. First one, don't worry about what you can't do. Focus on what you can. I know you guys want to grow. I know you've had difficulties. Don't worry about what you can't do. I know you can't move to Turkey. Many of you, you probably can't learn the Turkish language. You don't have a body that's as active as it once was. You're probably frustrated by these things. You can do some things. For one thing, you can change the way you answer questions people ask you. And I probably maybe said this before, but you all, I'm sure here and there, talk with people who aren't Christians. And what sort of questions are they going to ask you? You know, where are you from? What work do you do? How are you doing today? Don't miss those opportunities. Don't give empty, you know, bland, boring answers to those questions. I've learned long ago in Turkey, people say, how do you turn conversations to the gospel? It's not that difficult. You just are ready with your answers to their questions. So if they say, how are you doing? I say, better than I deserve, because of him. Who's him? Well, glad you asked. Let me tell you. or whatever. You know, like, what work do you do? Well, my day job is, you know, I'm working as a carpenter, but I really love helping out in the church. Have you ever been to a church? There are a lot of creative ways you can answer questions. And the other great one is, I may have said this before, but the best answers to questions are answers that finish with a question, because the one who asks the questions is the one who's guiding the conversation. So I think all of you could put some effort into thinking, how are some more creative ways I can answer questions when I'm at the grocery store, when I'm at the whatever I do, that will give me a chance to talk about Jesus. You also can use your smartphones. You may not have the feet of the evangelist who's always bringing good news here, there, and everywhere, but with this, you can reach all sorts of people. And I've already talked with some of the people in the church about how you can reach people just here in Whatcom County on the internet, so that rather than spending all this time looking at Facebook and YouTube and news and or computer games or worse, you can instead spend that time when you're looking at these screens reaching out to and interacting with people who are searching. And there might just be some here even in Whatcom County. Another way you could do it is, you may not be able to move to Turkey, but you could move into a more needy part of the county. I'm told that Bellingham's... Now, of course, the problem is apparently the real estate is horrifically expensive here. But, hey, who knows? Maybe your place is really expensive, and you could sell it and move into one of the real rough neighborhoods, which is full of people who need to know about Jesus, and you could get it for a lot cheaper because it's such a rough neighborhood. So you could actually make money that way, or like release the money for other good things. You know, and the Moravians, if you know the story of the Moravians, they sold themselves into slavery to be able to reach the slaves. I mean, that's love. That is love. And I'm not saying you have to sell yourselves into slavery, but maybe what could you give up for others? You know, like Pastor Dan said, Jesus didn't just lay down his life for those who loved him. He laid his life down for those who hated him, who were his enemies. And that's the sort of love that's going to make people notice this church. Just loving one another here is actually not that big of a deal. You know, Jesus says tax collectors and sinners, they do that too. I know in Turkey, atheists love each other. That is not what's going to make people stand up and notice Emmanuel Bible Church in this county. It's when you start loving people who it's not easy to love, when you love people who hate you. So that's something you could think about, each one of you, is how could I, what part, what aspect of my life could I lay down for the lost in this county, for the people who hate us, for the people who are in need? It's probably going to look different for each one of you, but I think if you thought that way, God might just surprise you with some interesting ways you could do it. Don't worry so much about Sunday church attendance. Worry about loving deeply those who don't love you here in Whatcom County. That's what I said, but I'll just say it again. You love deeply the people who are lost, and the church will fill. I mean, of course, you're going to talk about strategy and tactics and methods and this and that, which is all, I guess, okay. But love people around you deeply, and then the world will notice. Don't rely on yourselves and your abilities, but on God, whose power can raise the dead. That's in our text this morning. Don't rely on yourselves as a church, try to figure out what to do in the future. Keep your eyes fixed on this amazing God who has the power to raise the dead, and he will show you. And he has helped so many times in the past here, hasn't he? He's helped Emmanuel Bible Church time and time again for decades. I don't think he's going to let you down now. And I would say too, I guess this is something that God's really helped me in this last year, so I'm encouraging other people to do it, is to take a digital fast every once in a while. And what I do, did it again this summer. I went out to this Christian guest house on the island off the coast of Istanbul. No food, no other people, no internet, no telephone, no computer for 5 days straight. It was heaven on earth. Heaven on earth. And have you ever taken a digital fast? One thing is, we need, if you guys as a church are seeking God for how he's going to lead you, what pastor you're going to hire or whatever, a good thing to do, which Christians all throughout history have done, is to get on your face and pray and fast. And when you do that, God answers. And so I just want to say to you to do the same, to set aside the things that, whatever it is that can distract you from doing God's will. And I think that's a huge problem in the church today, is distraction. What is it that's distracting you? Take a fast from that. Just say no for a while. And in place of that, seek God. And I think that He will help you. He's rescued me many times, and I think He can rescue you in whatever situations you're in. Thank you.